Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the SOMTV podcast. My name is Jason Wise. On today's podcast, I speak with my good friend Rajat Parr, who's been in most of the SOM films. He is a winemaker and a farmer at Phelan Farm, and his journey is incredible. We're going to talk about the wines he makes and how he went from a sommelier to one of the pioneering farmers making wine right now. Before we do that, I want to tell you to go to SOMTV.com. Our documentary on the wines of Borgogna is dropping this week. It is called Inheriting the Future, and it's about the next generation of winemakers in Borgogna, a place that is normally associated with very expensive wines, sometimes hard to get wines, allocations, but the new generation is doing a lot to change that. You're not going to want to miss this film. Go to SOMTV.com and get that and 500 plus hours of the greatest culinary entertainment you can find anywhere else. SOMTV.com. Without further ado, my friend, winemaker Rajat Parr. Raj, it's a pleasure to have you back on the podcast. It means a lot to see your beautiful face.
It's great to be here. Yeah, it's been too long to see you in person. So
it has been too long. It has absolutely been too long. So I want to start. I can't tell if you are finding a way to relax in life finally, or if you're the busiest person in wine. You seem to be everywhere and yet kind of in a state of semi-zen right now. So I want to talk a little bit about your career, your mental situation at the moment, and also the state of wine, kind of how we're doing right now.
It's the happiest I've ever been in my life, the most satisfied and the most content. I spend 99% of my time in Cambria, farming here at Phelan Farm, and it's just been amazing. I do travel a little bit, mostly during the winter months between December and January, and then again a little bit after pruning, and then some few short trips in the middle. I was pretty much alone for a few years here in Cambria, so I couldn't really get out much. And as of this year, I have a small team put together, and so I can kind of, you know, get away for a few days. But it's been an amazing journey in the last 3 years since the world kind of stopped, and now everything is kind of back in motion again. Mm-hmm. For some people, very fast. For me, it's still kind of, you know, from flying 200,000-300,000 miles a year to flying a hundredth of that. So it's it's different.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. When I met you, this would have been probably 13. I mean, we're showing our age here, 13, 14 years ago. You were at the very, I would say, the tail end of your I'm a sommelier, I work the floor. You were at RN74 in San Francisco when we were filming the first SOM. And I want to ask you a quick question. Did you ever see yourself as a farmer then? I mean, I can't, knowing the progression you have gone from where you were as a trying to have a business, trying to run a restaurant, your head's in five different places at once, and now you're standing in the dirt. Did you ever see yourself as a farmer?
No, I had never farmed anything. I never even thought about it. It wasn't even, you know, I had no ambition to do that. And I think the pandemic kind of changed everything just personally for me. And I kind of took a lot of blame, and I was guilty in my own head to adding to the weight of this world, adding to the breakdown of the system and the pollution and everything else that I was adding by doing things in such a...
Hold on, that's a lot of weight to put on yourself. You're responsible for all of our carbon emissions? It's good to get to the bottom of this finally.
No. I definitely took I took some blame. I added. There was no reason for me to just fly across the globe for an event or to be at everything, everywhere, all the time, which I was, and I wanted to change that, and my only way to change that was to move to a small place and try to live in an ecosystem and kind of build that out and kind of really focus on one place and stay in one place. And you know, it's been a humbling experience, and you know, I love it. It's amazing. I wouldn't trade for anything else.
Well, we're going to get to Phelan Farm because I've been there. It's a beautiful spot. The question I have for you is, do you miss the sommelier profession at all? And is there, and then before you answer that, is there still a place for SOMs? Do we still need this profession? Do you miss it? And does it still exist?
No. I definitely don't miss it. It gives me anxiety sometimes when I go to restaurants. I'm like, oh my God, it's like restaurants give me anxiety now. I don't miss it. But I definitely think there's a need for it. I think there's still, you know, people want it. People, you know, you have to create wine programs. People still go out. I think there is a kind of a divided world currently. And I think in all aspects of life. And, you know, I'm not the one to say what's right, what's wrong. But, you know, there has to be something in the middle that'll work for everybody, because the whole Uber capitalism, like just you know, crunch numbers and just like, you know, big restaurants and volume and everything else. And then you have the small boutique and you know, it's always going to be that. I think also with the divide in agriculture as a whole, which is really what viticulture and winemaking is a part of, a small part, a platform to speak about the global health of this planet, which is what is the real problem. That's what's, you know, we only have 3% of a topsoil left in the world, the planet, you know, and some of the latest predictions are that we might only have 50 harvests left, 50. And that means for everything, not for wine, for all agriculture, that there'll be, you know, there's going to be no food left in the world after that. So those things kind of, I listen to a lot of environmental stuff and it really kind of, you know, moves me. And so, you know, doing something so small here is not, it's not going to move the needle, but it's a platform for everyone to kind of think about, like, every day what you do. You know, would you grow something in your backyard? Do you have a tomato plant? Do you have herbs? Or are you just buying everything in, or are you just shipping it from Amazon or wherever else? So these things are what I think about more than anything else. I know it's a little sad, but that's what I think about.
It is. I mean, so you're saying, like, the movie, it's just going to be like the movie Interstellar. We're going to have to leave the planet in 50 harvests?
Well, no, there might be a reset. There might be a different version of humans and different people, different animals. It might just be a whole different world in 50 years.
Interesting. I know that now you went to Cambria. Cambria is not what I would call the center of the wine world, but man, some of the wines up there are fantastic. Let me ask you, why did you go to that part of California? What are the challenges?
It's a very small coastal town, and there's only really three vineyards here around Cambria. And when I saw what Filon Farm is now, when I went there first in 2017, I was just moved. I was like, it looked something which a place I had, you know, been in the Jura and the Savoie. It really looked very different than most California vineyards, and that's what attracted me. It was vineyards in between forests and two creeks and lots of hillsides and still coastal. I had no idea how difficult it would be to farm grapes organically here, but I'm glad I did it. It's a wonderful experience to be in nature and to be surrounded by nature and to play with nature right in this wild jungle of a forest like canyon. The goal was to learn about soil health, about natural farming, about regenerative farming. Yeah, that's the reason I moved here.
So when you're talking about having you always call it a farm. You don't call it a vineyard. You don't call it a winery. You call it a farm. So what does that actually mean? Because there is a growing movement with this kind of holistic, everything sort of has to be in sync with each other, plant-wise and everything else. What makes it a farm versus a vineyard?
We are here as a part of an ecosystem. So we have 11.2 acres of vineyards in four different sections, 15 varieties planted there. Before I got there, there was this own wildlife there. There's mountain lions and bears and coyotes and bobcats and anything else that's around us. I brought in chickens and sheep to graze, planted a small apple orchard, and working on some vegetable beds and do some other, you know, some herbs and flowers and different things that we're going to start to produce here. And so to create the ecosystem, that's why you call it a farm. I mean, it'll be hard to call it feel an ecosystem, because that would be a good name to have, because it is.
sounds like a laboratory.
Right. But it is its own kind of, we try to keep it a zero waste, so we use everything. When we even got there was already cattle there, part of the Filon Ranch, which is where the family has been since 1851. And so then we incorporated the other animals we brought in, and we make compost from the animals that are on the property, and the sheep and chickens graze in the vineyards. And so it's kind of its own ecosystem, and the forests around it, it really feels like it's its own ecosystem. So that's why it's called a farm.
And the wines you're making there, go through what you've planted.
Yeah, we have, it already had a Pinot Noir and Chardonnay, and I grafted most of the Pinot Noir into other varieties like Pulsar, Trousseau, Sauvignon, Mondeuse, Jacquer, Altesse, Granger, Pink Chardonnay, there's Gamay, a little bit of Mencia, and a few others. So it's just kind of all my favorite varieties and kind of different things we've grafted, and they're all still there. We started grafting in 2017, and yeah, just kind of getting a handle on it right now.
So what do you think when you did this? Was it experimental? You were like, let's see what sticks, or are you field blending? Are you going to produce 12 different bottlings? And what are you going to do with all of this? This is crazy.
Yeah, we've made 12 different bottlings in 21.
That's a lot of label bureaucracy with the government, right?
Yeah, but it's create a label. It's, you know, it's all small stuff. We bottle by hand, all by gravity. We don't use pumps. We use pumps once a year, just from the press wine, and everything is bottled by hand. So it doesn't matter if I bottle one barrel. I've bottled half a barrel separately. It's all done by hand. We label by hand. We wax with beeswax from our property, and so yeah, it's all small, and it's, you know, it's highly curated. So it's nothing. It doesn't matter if I do a small batch or not. But it's, you know, it's the place. It's, but all the wines have kind of a singular thread, and that's the inoculum that's around us, and it's all, you know, in this kind of canyon with all these sycamores and oaks and willow and these two creeks flowing, which is still flowing right now in July. And yeah, it's, you know, lots of butterflies and bees and bluebirds, and, you know, it's alive, and we want to capture that in a bottle.
What have you found? I mean, because a lot of these varieties, I mean, if you're into wine, you've heard of Mencia and all of these things. I mean, Pulsard's kind of out there, though I do love it. What is working? Of all of these things you've planted, are there any where you're like, wow, this is really fitting the climate here in Cambria? And which ones are like, this was a disaster, or at least this is the hardest to grow here? What's the top and the bottom?
Yeah, no, I mean, of course, what has fit in the best is Sauvignon, the Sauvignon Vert, Sauvignon Jaune we got from the Jura. That fits in really well. You know, Gamay, it feels like a natural here. All the Savoie varieties, the Jacquer and the Granger, they feel like home. They're growing like gangbusters. It's really well. And then there's the finicky Pulsard, like very finicky. It's like, you know, it's like I compare it to like when you're cooking. It's like, you know, as simple as the grape is, it's like almost the attention is 10 times more than Pinot Noir. You know, it just is very, very, very finicky. Mondeuse grows in a really funny way, very slow. So just give you an example. Right now, we are in, July, whatever. We are still flowering. Chardonnay is flowering. Mondeuse is flowering. Mencia, we're going to pick it probably end of October, if not November. Wow. And that's just the way it is. It's, you know, we've had 2 days above 70 degrees, and we are almost in the middle of July right now. So it's just the way it is. You know, this place is unique. I'm not changing any of the varieties I planted. I'm going to make it work.
Is it hard to, I guess with such a, you know, your volume is not enormous. You're not producing, you know, 400,000 cases. So I guess the selling aspect is a little easier. But is it a challenge to go, here's a Pulsard to somebody? Or is it easy because it's Phelan Farms? I mean, what's the difficulty here?
I think it's a funny question. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's not about selling it. Is it where, you know, who wants it? Is it an interested customer base, or is it just someone moving boxes? In our case, people who are interested, the distributors we work with, most of our good friends, and you know, we export the wine, so you know, we send 5 cases to France, or like, you know, 3 cases to Sweden, or, you know, so people like, you know, they're all friends. Small amounts are made. Everyone gets a few cases here and there. And, you know, the idea that the main thing, the varieties are just a way to kind of push forward the farming, because the farming idea is more important here, for sure. It's also something, it's a journey for me. It's a personal journey to learn this. It's not something I hired three consultants and they told me what to do. I learned this myself. So, you know, and I did, I farmed the vineyard alone for 2 years and made the wine alone for 1 year. So it's an experience. It's a whole experience, which is very personal. And people who taste the wine and, you know, the wine's not perfect. It's not like it's, you know, the most best wine in the world, but it's a journey, right? It's like we are trying to understand how these varieties will work here in this climate, because there's not many places in the world where you're like, you know, you're flowering in the middle of July and you're going to, you know, maybe get, pray to God, you get 12 degrees of alcohol to pick it eventually. And you're not spraying copper and sulfur in the vineyards. We're spraying holistic things. We are spraying all natural kind of, you know, all products from trees and flowers and kelp and milk and, you know, things like that. So it's not the normal farming too. So all this comes together and makes it an interesting place, keeps me busy, keeps me thinking, and try different things every year.
All right, I got to ask this question. How the hell do you pitch this to an investor? How do you say, well, I'm gonna learn along the way. I have a great track record. I've made some wines. I mean, obviously, your wine, yours and Sashi's wine was very important in Somme 3. You have a lot of respect in the industry as a winemaker. How do you go to somebody and say, this is going to be a journey? How do you, what's your pitch deck look like on this?
Yeah, not some a businessman would approve of, you know. So so when we started, we have a small group of investors and all friends, and they trusted me, and they kind of, you know, yeah, so far so good. We'll see, you know, we are adding on another 22 acres of vineyards this year to the program, and we're going to have a winery and a tasting room soon to come. So, you know, it's all happening slowly, and you know, there have been many patient followers and on the journey with me, and it's amazing. It's incredible. A lot of non-believers and a lot of people who don't care, and that's fine. It's I'm not here to convince someone that Cambria is the best place in the world, but it's a unique place, and this is where I live, and this is where I'm going to be for the rest of my life.
Interesting. It's great that you're able to do something that, honestly, it's hard to even do in Europe anymore. It used to be this was the way you would do a winery. You know, you'd look to the future rather than the past. You know, you don't get that chance here in the United States. I mean, especially in California, really hard to settle down and say this is a lifelong pursuit. So that's admirable. I just have to say, I mean, it's admirable to do it. Do you still drink normal wine? And when I say normal, I mean, like, do you drink wine that like people put on Instagram anymore? What do you drink?
Oh, I, you know, again, there's like no wine shops or anything here. So, I drink normal wine. I drink German Riesling, and sometimes I drink champagne, and I mostly drink, like, you know, Jura and Savoie wines. But yeah, you know, I savor Burgundy more, because it's hard to find, and it's, most of it is out of budget currently. So, you know, hopefully one day we'll, you know, have a few more pennies to put together too. But, you know, I have friends who kind of open bottles for me. So it's, I'm grateful. I'm happy. It's not, I don't drink fancy wines. I drink simple wines and wines of friends. I have lots of friends around here in San Luis Obispo County. And so, you know, drink local wines. And yeah, that's fantastic.
So if I come to your house and I open up a Chateau Palmer Bordeaux, you're going to drink it?
Oh, 100%. I love Chateau Palmer.
I'm just curious because, you know, I see a lot of people, and I mean this actually in an affectionate way, you know, they get into regenerative farming and then they go, like, there is no, they kind of become very insular and you drink only that kind of stuff. And, you know, I will say it's refreshing to hear that you will still drink and put your foot in what I will call the regular world, though Chateau Palmer is not the regular world.
Yeah, no. I mean, I love it. I don't drink that much Cabernet, but I still have a small stash of old Mondavi Cabernet, and you know, I drink. You know, it's quite cold here, so I drink lots of Nebbiolo. Yeah. Believe it or not, you drink Nebbiolo, Sangiovese from Tuscany, and yeah, I drink everything. It's not. Yeah, it's not like I only drink regenerative farming wines or only natural wine or only anything. I just, you know, I have friends, and you know, it's you know, I try to drink more wines of friends than not.
Yeah, that's great. That's really great. So talk to me about the AVA there. I know that this is a little geeky, but talk to me about the Slow Coast AVA and kind of how that came about. Were you a part of that coming about at all?
No, I was not a part of it. Though the first meeting about the AVA was held at the Stolo Winery in Cambria here. And it's a kind of a important appellation, especially for people who are in no appellation. You know, the other appellation is San Luis Obispo County. But Slow Coast is really well kind of established. I would say something like Sonoma Coast, but even stricter because you can, it's around. So all the vineyards are in close proximity to the ocean. Some of them are warmer, some of them are cooler. I would say probably Cambria is the coolest off the Slow Coast. Last year we picked Syrah here on November 6th. Oh, and man. I think it's maybe 12 degrees of alcohol, 12.2 maybe. And yeah, and also you can go to Slow Coast. And I picked some Syrah from another great vineyard called Bassi. And that was picked like maybe in the middle of September. And so, yeah, it's a good 6 weeks difference, but I put the wine together and blended it together and it made a really incredible wine. So, you know, it's coastal, but depending on really the weather of how north or south. We are like right adjacent to Big Sur. So Ragged Point is basically 20 minutes away and that's where Big Sur starts. So it's definitely a unique microclimate.
Yeah, it's not an area that I think wine comes to people's mind, you know? I mean, obviously, there's been grapes there for a long time, you know, going back to the 1800s, but it's not been, you know, it's not Paso. It's not like a place where you endless vineyards, you know? It's mostly rolling hills, a lot of cattle, you know? It's just a different kind of a place. Well, I want to change gears here for half a second. So you're launching, I just saw, you're launching a wine glass.
Yeah.
Okay, can I give you some shit about this for a sec? All right, so I want to ask you, why do we need another wine glass? Just out of curiosity. And I love wine glasses.
I can ask the question. So
okay.
So first of all, it was Sashi Mormon's idea, my partner and dear, dear friend. And he goes, oh, we can't find wine glasses for the tasting room in Oregon and for the tasting room in Lompoc. You should just design a wine glass. I'm like, sure, no problem. But, you know, and I was like half jokingly, I'm like, but, you know, it's going to be exactly the glass I love because that's the glass it is. And so I love drinking wine out of small wine glasses, you know, because these big, tall, big glasses, not my thing, you know. It was my thing maybe, you know, 10, 15 years ago. Not my thing anymore. So I designed a very small wine glass, like a very fancy copita, like a little, you know, mm-hmm. you can drink champagne or mezcal or, you know, it's a small glass and it's a short stem. And I think it's the best glass in the world to drink wine or taste wines from. I believe it.
I'm looking forward to getting my hands on it because I will say at my house, we mostly drink out of what used to be like mustard jars or like little mason jars. And I'm talking even wine. That's what I drink out of.
There you go. They're short and they're like, you can hold them. Yeah, because you're not talking, moving your hands, you know, here's like...
My wife breaks every glass we own. That's another reason. We have kids. But also, when you go to Europe, I'm always endlessly blown away. If you're somewhere in Spain or Greece or wherever, they serve you wine, and in some cases, very good wine, and it's just in like a little cup. It's not even... Like the wine glass thing is for like show, and a little cup is for like... Enjoy the wine. It's really interesting to me.
Well, I want you to taste out of these glasses and compare them to other glasses and to the mustard jar and see what you think.
The mustard jar. I'm releasing my own line of mustard jar glasses that I just repurpose. So what does the future hold for you? I mean, I have now, you've been in almost every film I've made. I've known you for a long time. I am amazed at the amount of different stuff you have tried. I'm surprised you haven't tried out for the Lakers at this point. What's the future for you? What do you want to get into? Sky's the limit for the next thing you want to try.
Oh, this is it. I live in Cambria, spend time here on the farm, get some more animals. I'm going to get more sheep and hopefully get some bunch of pigs because I have no pigs. And just kind of keep doing this, keep growing grapes. We're going to start growing vegetables next year, get into vegetable growing, flowers and different things. And yeah, this is, no plans, and travel a bunch in the winter months when it's cold and wet here, and repeat, yeah.
Generally, when I ask somebody, what do you want to do with your life? The sky's the limit. They turn to me and they say, I want to get a bunch of pigs. That's the normal answer. Let's end this with just, besides your own wine, what's a bottle of wine you've had recently that people should know about? Something that you really liked that was interesting, could be popular, could be hard to get. Something you've had that you want the listeners to know about.
Yeah, I had a wine 2 days ago, and it's made by a dear, dear friend, Tegan Passalacqua. It's a Sandlands wine. And it's, he is a super, as you've met him, he's a humble and quiet guy. And the label was just that. It said Sandlands Red Table Wine. He gave me this bottle, I think, a year or so ago. And I'm like, it was 4th of July. I'm like, I won't drink wines only of my friends. And here is from Lodi. Now, Lodi has to be the most unappreciated wine region in the world. I mean, definitely in America. Because, it's people buy grapes from Lodi. And I made one wine from Lodi last year. And for some reason, the wine is amazing. His wine was this wine. Average vine age is 120-year-old vines. It's Senso and Carignan. My brain exploded, and I was in I took the bottle, to a friend's, barbecue, and there were not many wine. There were some wine people, but there were just hanging. There's a bunch of wines there. That bottle got empty in 3 minutes. Wow. And so I went back and tasted it again, and it really moved me. It was really, really incredible. And, Tegan is, of course he makes the wine for Turley but this is his own label called Sandlands, and he makes wine from other places, and he's planted his own vineyard up in Volcano, some Sicilian Etna varieties. But this wine was, wow, like red table wine. That's all it said. Sandlands Red Table Wine, 2021 Lodi. And it was the humblest and most delicious wine I had in a long time.
Oh, that's a great answer. Raj, it is always a pleasure to have you on. I miss you. And just for people who are not watching this on SomTV, if you're just listening, Raj is he's beautiful right now. So you're missing out if you're not watching this episode. Raj, we'll talk again. I love you, dude.
Yeah, love you all too. Right. Thank you so much.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. I want to remind all of you to go to SomTV.com and enjoy our brand new documentary coming this week on the wines of Borgogna, Inheriting the Future, about the next generation of Borgogna wines. I want to thank Rajat Parr for joining us today. I want to thank John Adams for producing this episode. And I want to thank all of you, including my mom, for listening all the way to the end. Thank you all. We will talk very soon.